Welcome to Functional Divorce, your guide to healing and happiness. I'm Dr. Karen Finn. No matter how you look at it, divorce sucks. Well, at least in the short term before people put their lives back together. And, well, I have to admit, that's what I always thought. But there's more and more research being done that says that I'm wrong. That divorce sucks for a lot longer than just at the beginning before you start putting your life back together. Because the research shows that there is an increased risk for health issues over the long term if you've been divorced, especially if you're a woman. Now, to help us understand how divorce affects our health and what we can do to reclaim it instead of becoming a statistic, I'm speaking with Dr. Jennifer Ridley. Dr. Ridley practices functional medicine. Her diverse training in nutritional medicine, acupuncture, chiropractic medicine, and functional medicine enables her to understand the root of a patient's problems. Her goal with her patients is to create their unique wellness plan so their body and organs are working optimally. Welcome to Functional Divorce, Dr. Ridley.
Thank you.
Well, there are some pretty surprising, and then again, some not so surprising ways that divorce has been shown to impact someone's health. And some of these are anxiety, drastic weight change, metabolic syndrome, depression, heart disease, substance abuse, insomnia, decreased mobility, and increased risk of cancer. And I think that's an incredibly long and diverse list. Which of these do you think you see most often in your divorcing and divorced patients?
I'm not sure I could say that there is one that is most often, because everybody's particular genetics, everybody's environment, everybody's life up until the point that disaster strikes shapes how they go forward. I would say it's pretty equal that any of those things can happen. Cancer is probably on the lower end because that'll take more like 10 to 20 years to show up.
Right.
But everything else you named, everything from weight gain to insomnia to low libido, all of that is just incredibly common to individuals under increased stress, of which, of course, divorce causes a lot of that.
Right, right. So with stress being at the root of what's causing these health issues, could you tell us what's going on inside our bodies when we feel stressed? Because it seems like these health issues, you know, are so wide ranging. And I just wonder if there's something common about stress, or is it all genetically based and we're all different?
Oh, no, it is the stress response that is causing this problem, because the stress response is designed to be short term. It's really designed to kick off what we call the fight or flight response, mm-hmm. so that you can go fight something or go run from something that you're afraid of. And then the life goes back to normal and the stress goes away. So when that response gets turned on all the time, that's when it becomes a problem.
So when you say short term, you know, I and your description there, right? You know, I think of the saber-toothed tiger coming at us, you know, as looking at us as his next meal. But that's not our reality. I mean, even for simple divorces, right, it goes on for days, months, years before the kind of drama and trauma of all that settles out. You know, if your divorce is shorter, does that mean that your stress response and the possibility of having problems is going to be less?
It really depends on you as an individual and how much you are internalizing that stress. Because, you know, even though the divorce is over in a few months, you may still carry the weight and the baggage of that stress for much, much longer.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter what the source of the stress is. If someone else is doing it to you or you're creating it yourself, mm-hmm. your body treats it the same, because the stress response is designed to make you go run or fight. So there's a big chemical cascade that's happening inside of you mm-hmm. in response to stress. And so no matter what kicks it off, that's the problem.
So I've been, you know, doing some research, and from what I understand, some of the chemicals that you mentioned that kick off when you're stressed cause inflammation. Is that like one of the first things that happen, or is that part of the longer chain, some other place in the sequence?
It's part of the longer chain. So in the short term, something called cortisol gets kicked off in response to stress, and then cortisol causes blood sugar to be elevated because you need fuel to go fight that tiger.
Okay.
It causes your lipids, your cholesterol to be elevated because these can also be used as sources of fuel. Mm-hmm. And cholesterol can help heal you when you're damaged.
Oh.
All of your non-essential life-saving things or life-saving things get upregulated and non-essential things get downregulated. So
let me
brain changes.
Jump in here for just a second. Upregulated means that there's more of it, and downregulated means that there's less of it.
Perfect. Yes. So you need your brain to function very quickly when you're fighting for your life. So you could multitask like crazy when you're under stress, but you don't need your memory. So you tend to forget where you put your car keys, the words for this.
Same with
things like your hormones. You know, you don't really need to be having sex and making babies while you're running and fighting for your life.
Mm-hmm.
So your hormones get downregulated. So your libido gets downregulated. So all of these things that we consider as relaxing and fun, those kind of things get downregulated when you're stressed. So those things that get increased or upregulated, the sugar, the cholesterol, those things have the potential to create inflammation. And so the longer this cycle goes on, the more inflammation gets created.
Okay. So, you know, you were talking about the cholesterol being elevated, the blood sugar being elevated. That sounds like that could quickly, or maybe not so quickly, I'm not the doctor here, you are. You know, does that lead, is that how you get to the diabetes or the hardening of the arteries or heart attack?
It absolutely can be. It absolutely can be.
Wow. So
yes,
this is pretty serious stuff when someone says they're underneath so much stress, isn't it?
It is. It is. In fact, I believe stress and inflammation are really at the root of just about every chronic illness that you can name.
Oh. So when I was reading the list of the incredibly long and diverse list of things that can happen, you know, when you're getting divorced, you know, that increases your risk, I guess I should say, when you get divorced. Were there some that you really thought should have been there that weren't?
No, I think you had a really good list, but there are certainly lots of illnesses. People end up with things like autoimmune illness secondary to stressful events. And, you know, we don't know for sure, but we suspect that's the link, that your body has just been worn out by the stress and the inflammation, and it leads to things like that.
Wow. So how can you recover from stress like that?
Well, that's a great question. And some of the best things you can do to offload stress are good, healthy exercise. Because remember, the stress response is designed to make you go run faster, jump taller, to fight for your life.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the best ways to offload stress hormone is through moving your body. So good, healthy exercise is a great start.
Well, let me ask you about that for just a second, Dr. Ridley, because, you know, one of the things that was in that long list was decreased mobility. Does that mean that if you start exercising, once you start feeling stressed, that you can start heading off the possibility of decreased mobility, or are you already set up for decreased mobility?
Anytime you allow yourself to just become sedentary, that's what's really setting you up for what you don't use, you lose, is absolutely true in this case.
Okay.
So staying active in times of stress is a huge benefit to make sure that doesn't happen. Unfortunately, most people tend to do the opposite. They tend to hibernate and do less, when really what's healthiest for them is to keep their body in motion, even if it's just going for a walk, even if it's just mopping your floors, washing your car, doing something to keep your body in motion will help offload some of that stress hormone.
Okay, something more than just picking up the remote control and changing the channel on the TV.
Right.
Do you have...
And there's,
Go ahead.
And other things you can do to help with this so that you aren't one of these victims of stress is to remove other sources of stress that you have more control over. So in the middle of a divorce, you often don't have a lot of control over what that other person is doing and all the stress that comes with that.
Right.
But you can change things in your own life. And some of the most important ones are diet and sleep. So choosing healthy choices of what you put in your body can really lower your body's stress burden. Because things you're putting in your body, like fast food, processed food, your body finds those incredibly stressful. So anything you can do to improve your diet and get better sleep, at least 8 or 9 hours of sleep a night, can also help a lot with lowering your stress.
Well, there's a challenge to that for most people that are going through divorce, at least it was for me and for nearly everybody I talked to, and that for most folks going through divorce, they don't feel like eating. How can you overcome that? Do you have any suggestions?
I don't know that you want to force yourself to eat necessarily if you don't feel like doing it. Staying well hydrated or even just drinking broth can be a good start when you don't really feel like eating. But what I have seen most often to people under stress is when they do decide to eat, they binge on something like ice cream or going and having fast food. And that's the critical time to make a better choice.
Okay.
If you eat something more natural and unprocessed, that's going to make a much bigger difference for you. So if you're only going to eat once or twice a day when you're under lots of stress, make sure you're making it a good choice.
Okay.
Not a binging kind of choice. The gallon of Haagen-Dazs is not the right decision.
Dang! Taking away all my dreams here.
That is what many people do, right? Because the stress response requires so much sugar because sugar fuels the stress response. It's a very vicious cycle. But that's one of the worst things you can do is feed it with more sugar.
Well, so does that mean then that fruit would be a poor choice as well?
Fruit is a much better choice because it comes with lots of fiber and vitamins that are in it to help nourish your body, whereas simple sugars don't do that. They rob your body of vitamins.
Okay. So simple sugars then would include like a piece of garlic bread or white rice?
Bread turns right to sugar or cupcakes or Ding Dongs or Snickers bars or big old chocolate shakes. I mean, there's lots of sources of simple sugar. But bread and alcohol. Bread and alcohol turn to sugar very rapidly in your system as well. So none of those are really great choices.
Okay. Well, then that would explain why, you know, some people turn to alcohol to try to help them through the stress of divorce, right? Because they are just continuing the vicious cycle.
That's right.
The other piece you mentioned, you know, to help people deal with the stress besides the exercise and fueling your body with healthy foods was sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of times insomnia comes along with divorce.
Right.
So how can you help yourself to get a better night's sleep?
What I refer to it as is good sleep hygiene. And so coming to bed about the same time every night and setting a pattern and a rhythm, even when you don't feel like sleeping, can be part of that. So you get on a very normal rhythm. Making sure your room is completely dark. And very few of us have that luxury because we have cell phones, we have VCRs, we have all kinds of things in our rooms that keep it bright. So wearing one of those eye masks that are designed to help make it really dark for you when you sleep can be very beneficial. And also kind of set the stage for your brain. So when it feels it go completely dark, it knows, oh, okay, now it's time to go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Also not eating sugar, carbohydrates, or drinking alcohol within 3 hours of bedtime. And if you're hungry, eating something healthy that contains protein can help soothe the brain and help it go quiet more during the night, whereas sugar helps keep the brain active at night when we're trying to sleep.
Now,
so
it,
not having sugar.
Is the protein suggested because it takes longer to digest, so more of your blood's in your stomach and not rushing around in your head with the racing thoughts?
Well, because having the protein doesn't create a sugar spike,
okay,
which is what we're trying to avoid. We don't want sugar and insulin spiking and then dropping in the middle of the night, because that agitates the brain and can often bring you up out of sleep.
Okay. Now, I've had some people ask me, what the heck is a protein? So I'll ask you, what the heck is a protein?
Well, it's something made with amino acids. It's a scientific answer. But the answer you're probably looking for is, you know, nuts are a good source of protein in this situation. Any sort of animal protein like turkey, steak, those are all good sources of protein. There are vegetarian sources of protein like soy. Is a vegetarian source, legumes are the vegetarian source of protein. So it's things that contain amino acids that are proteins.
Okay. Unfortunately, they don't have amino acid on the grocery store aisle. So if they're looking for meat and nuts and beef.
They're looking for meat and nuts or vegetarian sources like a soy nut.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. Well, that makes a lot of sense. So, you know, you mentioned having one of those sleeping masks to help make the room very dark. And mm-hmm. I found for myself that a sleeping mask does great, especially if one wraps around my ears as well.
Mm-hmm.
Am I alone in being sensitive to the sounds?
No, you're not alone at all, which that brings up another great thing to have people do is putting white noise in their rooms.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have neighbors, you know, they have dogs barking, things like that wake you up at night. Just one of a box fan can make a nice white noise, or there are, of course, apps for your smartphones that make white noise that can block out everything else. And that helps a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's your sleep hygiene, right? Kind of setting the stage for a really great night's sleep. And
right.
One of the things that I've noticed, you know, with myself and, you know, working with the folks that I do, is that oftentimes, because divorce is really a grief process, that we have all these what if thoughts that run through our head that help fuel the anxiety. So it's like, you know, that little hamster on the wheel just running, you know, and digging a path in our brain. Those repetitive thoughts will help, you know, cause the insomnia. Or you'll wake up with, you know, the repetitive thoughts just became so much louder than your dream thoughts or, you know, whatever thoughts
right.
you have when you're asleep, that now you're awake during the repetitive thoughts. What's your mm-hmm. recommendation for helping to calm that? Is there anything in addition to the sleep hygiene?
Well, there are a couple of things. One that pretty much anyone can do, which is learn meditation and use that to
uh-huh.
calm your thoughts when that happens. And second, if you work, you know, with somebody like me who does neurotransmitter testing,
mm-hmm.
often we see that those repetitive thoughts in the brain come from imbalances of your neurotransmitters, which are created by the stress response. And once we test those, so we're testing things like serotonin and dopamine, norepinephrine, epinephrine. Once we figure out what's out of balance, we can help
uh-huh.
you balance them. And that helps a lot.
So
with the repetitive thoughts.
Is that like a blood test?
In this case, it's a urine test.
Oh. So for people who are squeamish about having their blood taken, this is even easier.
Even easier and less stressful.
Which is probably a good thing because we're trying to cut it out.
That is correct.
So, you know, we've been talking about all these different wide-ranging things that go on when you get divorced and kind of focusing in on some of the ones that I think happen, I guess I'll call them more immediately when you get divorced,
mm-hmm.
you know, the kind of anxiety and the repeating thoughts, the kind of drastic weight change and how you can adapt your diet, the need to just kind of decrease the anxiety overall by keeping your body moving and well hydrated and sleeping well. But, you know, I think there are some other ones that maybe are triggered later in the process and not really, maybe I should call them the intermediate ones, like depression. How often is depression a factor in the stress response? Is it just when you're going through a grieving process like divorce, or is it pretty generic?
No, it doesn't. It can be anything that's triggering stress like that. So I see the depression a lot in people who are also having to care for maybe elderly parents or someone who's sick with cancer, the loss of a loved one, even a pet. I mean, any big sources of stress, chronic illness. People get very depressed after being sick with chronic illness for a very long time. Yeah. Well, we have linked the stress response to that depression because of a couple of reasons. The stress response raises your blood sugar, like we talked about, and that causes imbalances and mood distortion in the brain. And anyone who's had a bad day of sugar going up and down may know what I'm talking about. And then you do that for years on end, the depression can become very pervasive just from that piece of it.
Yeah.
But then the unbalancing of the brain chemistry brought on by these same stress chemicals that go on and on and on also leads to depression. So anybody dealing with any source of stress that goes on for a period of time can have mood distortion and even depression eventually.
Wow. Yeah, you know, I've kind of thought of divorce, people going through divorce typically having what I call a situational depression. So it's not something that's really long-term, but it's something that they kind of experience as part of the grief process. And it's kind of sounding like that's what you're saying. Am I interpreting you correctly on that?
Right. I think that you often see the depression just of dealing with it, but then you get kind of a secondary, almost worse, more pervasive depression when the stress goes on for a long period of time that has nothing to do with just the situation of divorce.
Okay.
So you may have gotten over the fact that you're divorced and you're wondering, well, why am I still depressed?
Right.
Because stress is still there, and that's what hasn't been dealt with and all the chemical changes that have happened to you. So that's a different kind of depression that doesn't go away sometimes quite as easily as the other.
Right, right. So let me throw this scenario out there at you. What if someone is incredibly fit? They eat really well. They sleep really well. Really well. I mean, they take great care of themselves. And then their spouse tells them that they want a divorce. Are these people going to suffer the same stress responses that everybody else does?
Yes. Yes. They will have an advantage in that they have better coping mechanisms when it comes to exercise because it's a regular part of their life. And so if they're lucky, they'll continue that.
Okay.
But yes, they're not any more immune to the rest of the changes than anyone else. They might gain weight at a slower rate. A lot of people with chronic stress gain weight from cortisol. Cortisol often leads to weight gain. And people that are more fit and more metabolically active can mitigate that somewhat because their system is more active.
Okay.
But the rest of it, it doesn't matter how fit you are. It's important. Cortisol is still going to wreak its havoc.
Okay, so you can't, you know, like head off bad things happening to you necessarily with stress because you're taking really great care of yourself. It just means that maybe you'll bounce back a little bit better.
Right. I mean, you still need to be just as vigilant. Just because you're healthy doesn't mean you're going to escape all of this. You need to continue to do everything you can to minimize the stress. So, you know, I tell my patients that are going through things like this, if watching the news is stressful to you, quit watching it during this time. If watching scary movies is stressful, don't do it during this time. Because all of those are sources of stress that add up. And it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter what your level of fitness is. Stress is stress is stress.
You know, it's so funny that you bring up the news and the scary movies because I swore off of both of them years ago.
Yes, and there's good reasons to do that. Very good reasons to do that. Now, some people thrive on it. Some people love scary movies, but a lot of people don't. And some people can watch the news and not let it upset them. But there are, you know, people that are screaming at the TV by the end of the news. Those are people that should probably back off watching the news for a while.
Well, you know, I got to say for me that it stopped all my nightmares when I stopped watching that stuff.
Right. The evening news stresses you out right before you go to bed. That's a terrible thing. It's a terrible dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, ooh, I did one thing right. Okay.
Yes. Yes, you did.
You know, one of the other things that all the research that's being done these days on how divorce impacts our health is that it's showing that women take a harder hit than men do. Why mm-hmm. is that?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with our female hormones, at least from a medical perspective. I'm sure there are, you know, other deeper reasons about, you know, how women may feel things differently, but cortisol, which is the hormone that fuels the stress response, mm-hmm. can very easily steal your progesterone and estrogen to make more cortisol because they're all made from the same substrate, the same beginning stuff.
Okay, so
we call it cortisol steal. It's stealing your female hormones.
Okay.
And so for women, our hormones are such a huge part of every part of us. But I think it affects us more. It can steal testosterone as well, mm-hmm. but it just makes a bigger difference to women when our hormones get out of balance. Men are much less complicated when it comes to hormones. Female hormones, they're like the, you know, the jet cockpit of the 747. There's a whole bunch of knobs and dials.
Yeah.
And, you know, men are just more up, down, left, right. It's much easier to navigate. I really think that's a why.
Okay, so if that's the why, There's another phenomenon that's going on these days, and it's called gray divorce. And you know that's where people gray divorce.
Okay.
So it's people 50 and older, you know, who are getting divorced. You know, they've been married for decades, and yet now they're choosing to divorce. And since that's also the age range-ish of menopause,
mm-hmm.
does that mean that gray divorce is harder stress-wise for women than divorce earlier?
That's a great question. I doubt there's a simple answer here because there's so many things that play into a woman's life during that time. But perimenopause and menopause is pretty tough for most women already, mm-hmm. adding the stress and cortisol stealing what little hormones they have would certainly be a wrinkle that would be quite complicated. But they're also more mature and more able to deal with stress. So, you know, there's certainly going to be mitigating factors too. So I don't know if it's worse or not, but it has the possibility of being so.
Something else to think about. Wow. I hadn't, you know, thought of that connection before, but, you know, going through perimenopause myself and seeing how challenging it can be, I just thought, oh my goodness.
Right. Yes. Any woman who's been there can tell you loss of hormones is no fun.
Yeah. So if you had to sum it up as what are your top one or two recommendations for people who are going through divorce, are feeling stressed out, and really don't want to have, you know, or really want to increase their risk for heart disease or cancer or any of the rest of that, what would you tell them?
Be kind to yourself. Build in downtime into your life so you have some rejuvenating, non-stressful things around you. And then just be very good with your sleep and with eating right and drinking enough water. Those are really the most important things you can do yourself to help offset some of the stress and stay active. Don't hibernate.
Yeah, no matter how much you may feel like it, you need to be out and about.
You need your support system. You need to have family and friends. You need to have things that help recharge you. Don't try to go through it alone.
Yeah.
And you know, get out in the world. It makes a difference.
Yeah. Gosh, that's so much wonderful information. And I know it was just the tip of the iceberg, because your depth and breadth of knowledge on just how the human body works is phenomenal. And I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, as I do every time we have a chance to talk, Dr. Ridley.
Thank you, Karen.
Well, let me thank you again for joining us today and sharing some of your knowledge with us.
It was my pleasure. This was fun.
Good. Everyone, I've been talking with Dr. Jennifer Ridley, who's a functional medicine doctor. And you can learn more about her and her practice by visiting livewelldfw.com. And I guess the message here is, you know, divorce sucks in more ways than most of us realized. I mean, you know, how many really knew the effect of the stress of divorce would have on your body? The long-term consequences can be really pretty sobering. However, by knowing the risks, especially those for women and our hormone that looks like a jet's cockpit. There, I can say that word, cockpit. And using the wonderful information that Dr. Ridley shared with us, you can decrease your chances of becoming a statistic.